This is professional radio, gentlemen.
And it's front wheel drive.
Scotty, have you got anyone you want to thank?
Just myself.
And now I do the after hours.
Gentlemen, what would you go for?
Thanks to your sin there.
Okay, and because it's not a supercar.
But it is.
It's not.
Automotive perfection comes in the form of two letters, A and U.
Long live my LTD.
Welcome to Car Talk on 98.9 Northwest FM for our live listeners, which is probably, you know, three of them. And then to the rest of the podcast listeners, live through the power of the internet, how are you going? I am joined in this, well, in the digital studio, by myself in the main studio, by Matty J, the one and only, the main host, the big daddy.
Thank you.
Mr. Scotty Joe Johnson, how's it going?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Good here. And Mr. Edward Munting, or sorry, I should say Dr. Edward Munting.
I'm no doctor.
You pretty much passed the doctor test as we started.
One exam question that I got.
One more than me.
Blood clot.
Yeah, blood clot. Yeah, that's the answer to everything. Before we get started, Edward, my condolences to you.
To me, well, I haven't really lost anyone, but I assume you're talking about Barry Humphries.
I am.
Yeah, he's a very good, he's a wonderful comedian, a very professional man, and I'm a big fan of his. So it's a sad week.
Have you actually met him in real life?
No, I haven't. The closest I ever came was when I used to work for a company who. There was a temp guy working for us, and his wife worked for a magazine in Sydney where Barry's son worked. So we concocted this plan where I rang up the magazine and demanded to talk to someone else, you know, someone else on the staff as Dame Edna, and they believed it. And so they questioned his son and said, hang on, wait. And he said, no, Dad would never do that. And so apparently he rang Barry, who was skiing in Switzerland, and said, did you just ring my work? And he was like, no. So, and then we had to come clean as to what we'd done. But, yeah, so that's the closest I ever got to Barry.
Mini Ponds and Puckle Street lost its most famous member.
That's right.
In Dame Edna, who I was lucky, I had the privilege of.
There's a picture behind me on my wall of Edna's.
Yeah. who I was lucky enough to go see with you live, Edward. That was a lovely evening. But I think the world's lost a very influential comedian.
That's right.
I mean, the LTD song was based upon
Yeah. It's not just Edna that's. You know, we've lost that cultural attaché to Australia, Sir Les. You know, the consistently drunk, smoking, you know, slob of a man who represented Australia. So yeah, it's a sad week.
It is very much a.
But a great long weekend.
Absolutely. And I was going to say it is Anzac Day today, so we do remember our fallen soldiers who have gone before us to protect this lovely country which we call Australia. So we remember them. We could fit that in definitely before we get into the main bits of the show. But Alan, how are you going, my friend? I've got a bone to pick with you.
I'm doing all right. Yeah, pick away.
C63.
What? It's a car on sale. I'm thinking of some stuff. Why?
What's made you say, oh, you know what, wouldn't mind one?
I've always wanted one. I'm just saying. It's I've been looking at a couple of things to possibly go Harvey's on with my brother-in-law, and it's one of the cars that's up for option. The other car is a chap-spec GTR.
Okay.
Important. So, and when you're halving the money, it kind of, the difference is not as significant.
Mm.
Obviously, it still is significant, but... it was probably going to be a project towards the tail end of this year if it was going to go down or not.
Yeah.
But that's what I kind of had my eye on. And you mentioned that your brother was getting rid of his. So, yeah, I thought, you know, if I'm going to buy one, why buy one from a stranger? Why buy one that I'm, you know, kind of
having? Is Lucas selling his, Matty?
He is. Yes, he is.
Why? Already? He just bought it.
I know. He doesn't want to sell it, but he's like, oh, I need a...
Interest rates?
Yeah, pretty much. That's the the fair reason, unfortunately. Mm. So he's like, yeah, I need to move it on, you know, pay for other things. Probably wants to put another bigger turbo on his F6 because he's just like that. So I said to him, why? And then shame. So I did the whole, what's his name? Darren Hinch. I'm like, that's a beautiful car. Why are you selling it? You've got a M156 with nothing wrong with it. Like, that is the perfect example.
But he does have other toy cars.
He does.
But, well, one,
yeah.
He's got their Ford. What's the other? Does he have anything else?
Well, we still got that WRX. We got to start tearing into. We haven't started.
Yeah, wherever that is. Yeah.
I forgot you had that.
Yeah, I've still got that. It's just sitting there. So we got to actually pull the motor on that. I've got to speak to him when we're going to start that. But anyway, it's a bit hard now that he's got a kid. But yeah, we'll have to definitely start doing that. But Alan, car updates with you. Obviously, you're getting into C63s.
No, just speculating at the moment. I'm not getting into anything.
Speculating, he says.
Apart from that, the MX-5 has been on the road quite a bit lately.
Good.
But I'd, after, I think, last week's conversation with Mr. David Prince, you know, throwing down the soft top whenever I get a chance. And that's what I've been doing these, especially these last couple of days. It's actually been, you know, in the 20s. It's
been glorious.
Beautiful. As we know, sun's out, guns out.
Yep.
So, you know, going to be flexing these pythons. I've quite enjoyed just, yeah, top-down MX-5 driving. I've also decided that, yeah, I do like the engine noise, but occasionally, you know, it's not too bad to put in a couple of AirPods. You know, noise cancel a little bit and just have an overall comfortable ride as well. Mm. It's been a pretty good experience overall. Just kind of reminding myself that this is a convertible. It's made to, you know, drive with the top down. Enjoy it a little bit like that.
That's right.
Absolutely. Scotty.
So I wasn't on last week, but in between that time, I haven't done too much. I've been doing a little bit of groundwork, just digging around for getting the wheel fix for the 31.
Yep.
Gave the Subaru a wash. That's pretty much about it, unfortunately. Oh, actually, I did go to Supernova, and there's a place, well, there's like a little shop there, and they sell almost like Initial D kind of artwork.
Yeah, yeah. So
a couple of posters here. So here's number one.
Oh, that's cool. That's very
like a skull lined there.
Yeah. And
that's sick. That's very cool.
And I got silhouette one of a R31.
Oh, that's cool. Nice.
I like that. That's classy.
It is.
Black and white line drawing. Very good.
And then this one.
R34.
Yeah.
Lovely.
I do have a few of his other stuff, but that's at mum and dad's house. So got a couple of his other work. And yeah, when I went there, he had these new prints there and I thought, yep, I need it.
Absolutely.
So I grabbed those to add to the collection.
Supernova, for the international listeners, it's just a big, I guess, Comic-Con style festival. There's a lot of interesting different things, a lot of pop culture things relating to, you know, more of the sci-fi stuff as well. And yes, of course, for the car notes, some car stuff. A great trick to get in, not that I'm endorsing this, is you rock up in high-vis vests with a couple of electrical cables and some microphones and microphone, you know, stuff, and let you in for free.
Get out.
Yeah.
We don't condone it, but we do condone it at the same time. So
I mean, I've done it several years in a row, so.
There's going to be like a whole bunch of people like rocking up.
Everyone's in, you know, high-vis. I worked here. To be fair, I was with one person that did technically work there. But the majority of us definitely did not.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, so it's a great time.
Edward.
Me? I think I missed a week last week, maybe.
Did you sell that horrible vehicle, that VW?
That got passed in, and it's currently being sold again through the same auction house. And, yeah, so that finishes tomorrow night. So, yeah,
I've lowered the reserve.
I have. So we'll see what happens there. I was driving the Scamble a week last week, which was great fun. I really enjoy commuting into South Melbourne and back in that. And it's very economical too, which is always good. And I like the automatic. You know, it's good in traffic. So I was just zinging down zinging down Dandenong Road and zinging back again and going, how fun is this thing? Get a lot of looks in that car. So I'm excited to I'll put that away again now because I went away for the weekend, towed the old caravan. So I needed the Pajero to do that. And that's always fun. But, yeah, on Sunday, I think it was Sunday. Yeah, Sunday, our friend Tommy, who's been on the show with his 93 Range Rover Vogue SE, or no, Vogue Plus, his car is, because it's got the electronic air suspension that he's mended. And so it actually works. We went off-roading up in the high country. So we did a few nice steep trails and it was funny. Most of it was fairly tame. Like it was challenging, but not crazy challenging. Nothing that me or the car couldn't handle. But we got to the very end of this trail and it was basically you drive down a rocky cliff face into a river. And so you kind of had to be very conscious of what line you took because if you went too fast or took the wrong line, you would literally rip off bull bar, damage sills, you know, bust stuff. So, and I was sort of, I got halfway down and sort of went, I'm going to damage something. This is, you know, this is, and my car is bog stock, you know, it's not lifted, doesn't have bash plates underneath. It does have a rear diff lock, which is factory. So I had low range everything, center diff lock, rear diff lock, first gear, you know, crawler gear. And I was still on the brakes. It was that steep.
Wow.
Anyway, with a bit of, you know, head out the window and guidance and people yelling and don't go on that rock, go on this rock. You know, we got down and I didn't damage anything. It was a miracle. And then people are like, oh, and then you're in the river. And it's like, yeah, the river's the easy bit. You know, once you're in the river, you just plant it and plow through. That was all right. And I don't have a snorkel. But it wasn't that deep. So the pads did very well. And then Tommy came down in this Range Rover on a different line to me, and it was still treacherous. Like, you know, when you can see the whole roof of the car and you're standing horizontal, that it's like, oh, that's quite steep because normally you can't see the whole roof of the car. It's like a bird's eye view sort of thing. So he did very well and crawled down and didn't damage anything either. But we had to go, yeah, really pick your line. But yeah, that was fun. That was Sunday. So it's just been a caravan-y four-wheel drive-y sort of weekend.
Did you use a whole tank of fuel getting down that hill? Because it's
Nah, not a whole tank doing that. You know, it used to be, there was the last bit we're right on top of this mountain ridge. And then it's basically like, oh, you want to go down now, you know, and the road just does these huge, you know, dips and then those washouts and then the dips and then the washouts. And so you're going up and over, up and over, up and over. And then all of a sudden you're at the bottom of this river thing. So they really took you down incredibly steeply. I was, again, on the brakes, first gear, low range, diffs all locked and everything. That you know it's steep when you're on the brakes, even in first gear low.
Does that have hill descent control?
No, it's got none of that. Okay. Just normal old school all-wheel drive. And when you put it in low range, centered, diff locked, it gets rid of the traction control, which is good. So you don't have any of that electronic trickery trying to sort of do its stuff. You know, you're just basically raw mechanical, which is what you want.
Yeah. Well, I mean, instead of having hill descent control, you had ed descent control because...
Exactly right. But it's probably the most... Yeah, in fact, it would be the most hardcore I've done in that car since owning it. So I have done four-wheel driving it, but it wasn't as tough as what we did on Sunday. So it was good. It was a good test.
They are incredibly capable, those Pajeros. Very, very capable, which is actually really good.
The guy who ran the campground, which is about probably 20 minutes down the road from where we were, he was chatting to me this morning and said that he said, oh, I had one of these. It was brilliant. Yeah, it did all the tracks up in that state park where we went. He said, I've got a 200 series Land Cruiser now because I just needed more space. You know, the seven seats were a bit small in the pageant. But he said, oh, yeah, it was great. Did all that without a hitch. There were some guys coming the other way going through the river and then up the rock wall. That was interesting. So there was one in a fairly stock Prado that did a bit of scraping underneath. They came up at quite a bit of speed. And then a couple of, you know, young louts in a Hilux dual cab that was jacked into the sky. And they had a few goes at it just because they could. And they were driving different lines and spinning wheels and blah, blah, blah. So they did well. But yeah, fun to watch. I think my friends were sort of standing there because
Tommy's done four driving. I've done four driving, but our other two friends who were there sort of hadn't. And, you know, Volvo Alex, he was there. He hadn't. And so they're also standing there watching, going, holy hell, like, what is this? Should we be worried? You know? it's like, no, you're not going to roll. Like, none of that's going to happen. It's just more, you got to be real careful on the rocks.
Yeah.
I'm more interested in mud and slush and challenging things like that really don't hurt the car. Whereas if you're going down narrow tracks, you just destroy your paint. If you're going boulder hopping, you just dent stuff. You know, you snap suspension and dent sills, and that gets expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, fun. What about you?
Not much for me in the car front. I was away last week. I got back. I went to Adelaide and got a rental car. I got my Kia Stonic or similar, and I got a free upgrade because that's what happens, as you know. But I was waiting for them to say your new MG. But instead I got a brand new Toyota RAV4, which was nice. Mm. So yeah, it was an upgrade. So it wasn't a hybrid one, but it was still quite fuel efficient. And
but it wasn't the V6 with the 200 kilowatts.
No, I don't think they do that anymore. Which is a shame. Imagine a hybrid V6 RAV4. That'd be sick. Anyway, I drove that and had a good go on that. But I just want to say, in Adelaide, I'm surprised at how many older cars are on the road there. And I was speaking to Steph about this, and she's like, yeah, it's because we don't have to do a roadworthy when we change them into someone else's name. So you just transfer it into an name and just can keep going. I saw that many cars from the 70s. I saw old Corollas, old Datsuns. I saw everything. And I was like, yeah, this is cool. Like, I get this. But it seems that the cars are actually in half decent nick too. Like, you know, they're driving fine, and they're quiet. Like this early Corolla passed me. Like, it was just quiet as. I'm like, wow, that was remarkably quiet. So yeah, cool Adelaide stories. That was got the RAV4 valeted at the hotel I was staying at, which was pretty cool. And I'm like, got my new RAV4. And anyway, I test drove the new Kia Sportage, which I really liked. I thought that was a really good car, the GT line, in the diesel. Lovely car to drive. Yeah. Really impressive. Really impressive. I can see how far Kia's come a long way, because I noticed I had a Stinger there, and I got talking to the guy, and Steph's like, oh, I wouldn't mind having a look at the Sportage. So we went and had a look at the Sportage and took it for a drive, and yeah, it was brilliant. We had some time to kill one morning, so we did that. I can see why it got like a SUV of the year or whatever it was, because it's a cracking thing to drive. But anyway, that is virtually it on my end. I've just gotten back and gave the cars a wash, and that's about it on my end. I was meant to go to the wreckers, but somebody didn't call me.
I didn't think that was today. That wasn't today.
No, I'm kidding, Edward. I'm just trying to
make you
laugh. I know. I'm just trying to make you laugh, Edward. Relax, mate. Relax.
It's so high maintenance.
I know. Anyway, moving on to tonight's topic. Before we get into car of the week, which I brought back this week. Now, I want to ask you guys a question. Have you ever been to have you ever gotten your car back from a mechanic or even looking at parts that you were supposed to you might need, and be like, holy hell, that's expensive. Like, that is ridiculously expensive. I cannot justify that. Now, I got thinking about this before, purely for the fact that my Typhoon, for example, the clutch in that car is extremely expensive. It's a $5,000 clutch. It's an AP racing clutch from the UK. Very, very, very expensive. And like for five grand installed, or like 4,000 something, you know, just to buy it. And that's trade price to my mum at the time. So she was like, well, she's like, whatever you do, be easy on your clutch in your car. I'm like, yep, sure. See, that I would happily be easy on my car, because I don't want to spend $4,000. Get a call. My mom gets a call from the guy that was running that Ford supplying place, that they were getting rid of all the FPV stuff. And they're like, does your son still own that Typhoon? And she's like, yes. He's like, come over, I've got a gift for him. And it was that clutch, the same clutch, but for $1,500. So I was like, hold out your hand. I'll have one of those in my spare pocket. Have you ever been, you know, either one of those, gotten to be like, oh crap, I didn't expect that, or wow, that's ridiculously expensive for what that is, gentlemen?
I guess I'll start because I've got one of each. Basically, right when I started uni in Canberra in 2019, I decided to get the WRX serviced properly just to make sure everything was going to be, you know, up to spec, because I was going to end up traveling 650Ks possibly a couple of times in, you know, a short time frame. So that, you know, and this, I also had changed mechanics. So this is also, I guess, showing that the other mechanic may not have looked after my car as they probably should have, and maybe he was letting things slide. Because once the WRX basically went to the new mechanic who actually had a look at it, it needed a bit of work. It started off as just leaking rocker cover gaskets, progressing to leaking cam seals, and the engine was out. Next thing I know, so I'm like, well, at this point, you might as well do the clutch because the engine's already out. And I come back to a $5,000 bill.
Whoa.
Yeah, so that was because I guess I had not asked for updates either, so I wasn't getting updated with the price. I just, the last spot I recall the bill being out was probably about 2,200 with my own estimates and understanding, and then obviously it had gone higher and higher with the clutch. While the, you know, while you had the boxer engine out, you might as well do the spark plugs then and there, because, you know, rather than you have to, you know, reach in with tiny hands, as most mechanics have to, unfortunately. That sort of stuff.
You did the timing belt as well, didn't you?
Yeah. Like, because the cam seals and you having to take off the timing cover, timing belt, a new timing belt kit, you know, that sort of thing. And those are all, I believe, genuine Subaru parts as well, so not necessarily the cheapest. So, yeah, everything, like, at the end of the day, obviously, everything was priced properly. There's nothing exceeding its value or anything. But just, yeah, everything ended up coming to about $5,000, and I was like, ooh, that's a spicy meatball, you know? And it was quite a bit of shock, but, you know, I had paid for it. And at the same time, like, looking at it now, what, how many years down the track? What are we at? 4 years down the track. Very little regret, because my brother-in-law still has that car. And that car is, you know, at over 300,000 Ks. I think it's probably close to about 320 at this point. Still going fine. You know, original head gaskets, that sort of thing. So the car, you know, is still running quite fine, which I'm quite happy about. It's not like it's needed any extensive repairs more recently. So it was like that big bill shock at the start, and, you know, kind of that hit. And, but, you know, like I said, it's not something I regret, because the car's still running. If I had, like, you know, wrecked the car the next day or something, heaven forbid that kind of thing would happen, I'd be real pissed off.
But I guess doing a maintenance item like a major, like, that's a major service for it. Like, it, the car will be fine for the next, you know, 7 to 10 years, really. Like, it's because you've done everything, clutch, it's all done.
Yep. So at least, like, those things don't have to be worried about, like, you know, with my brother-in-law. And hopefully, if or when I get the car back, it'll be things that, you know, I can at least acknowledge and be like, these were done, you know, by me. And so they should be all right. So I have to be worrying about them. The overpriced item I'm going to go for is the good old MX-5 with its little tear in the soft top where the window is met. That, you know, when I was hit with just, I decided to price it out myself, which, giving, yeah, I have to buy the soft top from the US, that's going to cost me about somewhere in the range of, depending on the exchange rate, $1,600 to $1,800 shipped to Australia. So with that in mind, kind of, I thought, well, if I'm going to have it brought in, might as well ask some professionals what they would charge to actually install it, and they could bring it in. Maybe they could get it for a trade style price. Not that I'd get the discount. It's just, it'll probably be packaged into the whole price. And both quotes I got for well over $3,000. Mm. I think it was $3,300. One was like $3,100 or something. So, you know, for a soft top replacement, like, yeah, I don't know, $3,300. When, again, if we take out the price of the actual soft top of, you know, $1,800 or thereabouts, you're still left with about, what, $1,400 worth of labor. And again, I, not being a mechanic, not being a, you know, interior repair person, I can't say I can guarantee that it does not take $1,400 worth of labor. But again, I've also seen guides on how to do it. And the people that when they know what they're doing, can get that kind of thing done in about 6 hours. So I'm not saying I shouldn't be able to, shouldn't be paying a professional, you know, what they're owed, but let's just say you're charging a shop rate of $100 an hour and you know what you're doing. You can get a job done in 6 to 7 hours. The $1,200, $1,300, $1,400 just feels quite a bit unjustified to me. And, you know, maybe it could take a bit longer, but still, it's just given Australia's always been a country known for kind of a high labor rate. But yeah, the fact that the price of the actual item itself is, you know, balancing the price of the labor, I don't know, rubbed me the wrong way. So it's put me in the idea of DIY, like give it a go. You know, again, I'm probably going to have a lot of difficulty, but at the same time, I don't think it'll be so difficult that I would rather pay somebody, you know, $1,400 to actually get it done.
We can all come over one night and just smash it out and get it done.
Yeah. Like getting the actual soft top out of the car, that's, again, if you know what you're doing, that's about an hour's work, not even. If you don't know what you're doing, like myself, maybe it'll take me 2.5-3 hours. But that's, I'm willing to sacrifice those extra bit of time to save potentially $1,400.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like it just comes down to what's the task. If it's something like pulling out a whole engine, no, that's probably not in my sphere of things that I'm willing to give a go. Because if, you know, that craps itself, I'm, you know, how am I going to, I'm probably going to get the car towed to a mechanic with a bunch of parts and stuff surrounding it. Whereas with this, all right, the top's, you know, not back on. I'll just drive it anyway on a sunny day, get it to the shop, and then, you know, pay the penalty that I will have to pay because I've given it a go myself. The good old, I tried to fix it and didn't tell you, you know, penalty. But that's probably something I'm more willing to deal with than, you know, a more, let's say, mechanical kind of issue.
Yeah. No, I mean, seeing Ed China do it on Wheeler Dealers, and I don't think it's much different from that one. It's probably exactly the same.
Speaking of which, just sorry to cut you off there, Maddie. Pricing the soft top from the UK, similar colors, obviously not the same blue one that I wanted, will cost me about $1,200. Plus a couple hundred for shipping. And if I was actually happen to be in the UK, they'd actually fit it for free.
Yeah.
David could pick it up for you. He's in the UK.
I'll just get the car shipped over. But that's it's so interesting to me that, you know, again, we're at this point, we live quite globally, you know, we're buying parts from overseas, that sort of thing. Is it really that different that, you know, with about $1,200, $1,300, you could get the soft top fitted in one place, whereas here you're looking at what, $3,200, $3,300.
Mm-hmm.
That's just yeah, I don't know.
Can you get the exact same color? Because I know the classics had different colored tops.
Yeah, the classics had the blue ones, and the one from Robin's Auto Tops is blue with the glass rear window, electric demister, everything. And that's why I'm happy to pay the extra bucks for that. Like, it ends up being the exact right, you know, replacement. Yeah. The only better, I guess, I could get is probably from Mazda, but Lord knows Mazda will not make them anymore. And if they did make them, they'd probably charge me $5,000. Yeah, that's my story of Bill Shock, I guess we'll call it. That'll be the title of the episode,
I think. Scotty.
So I was having a think, and there's just one car that comes to mind. Can you guess it?
Does it start with a B and end with a W?
Yeah, so... obviously, when I had the M3, a lot of work went into it. Like, it was very, very expensive. They changed everything. I already knew it was going to be expensive. So, like, expensive part, I wasn't going to mention the SMG because everyone knows that that's expensive anyway. It's like, you know, $7,000-$8,000 to get that one replaced. And that's just the pump itself. So, the SMG pump, pretty expensive. Done heaps, all gaskets, everything for that. So I thought, you know, this car is now absolutely bulletproof. And a couple of times afterwards, I'd put the key in the ignition and go to turn it to start it, and nothing. It would just click. Oh, that's weird. And I'd fiddle again, and then it would start, and I'd drive home. But then one time, it just completely gave up. I was like, what's going on here? Because, you know, everything was working, you know, you hear the fuel pump prime and everything, and just a click. So, okay. So I thought, all right, I'll get an auto electrician out. They come out and they had no clue. And then it got towed to the place that did all the work on my BMW in the first place. So I ended up back there again. They put up the diagnostics and everything. And they said that what's happening is when I put the key in, it's not saying that it's the transmission's in neutral like it should be. So it won't start. And because of that, it's some kind of module or something in there that needs to be replaced. So I thought, okay, that's cool. No dramas. Get that fixed when you can. I think it was a few days later. Then I go in to pay and they're like, oh, he was giving me updates and he's like, oh, it's done this and this as well. And we got to actually change and give you a new key. I thought, oh, okay, great. Whatever it takes. I need the car, obviously. Going to pay the bill and it was about $3,800. So for me having two keys, I'm down to one key. They had to code the key. And what it did was it fried a few things along the way in the ignition. So it wasn't just the module that had to change. There's a few other things that were fried along the way that had to be replaced too. Yeah, so that bill wasn't great considering how much I already spent on that car originally. So not too happy on that one.
Ouch.
Yeah, so that was painful.
When you bought the car, did it come with a roadworthy?
Yes.
And what did it need to get fixed? Like how long did you before you realized you're like, holy crap, this thing needs work?
A couple of weeks.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Far out.
Yeah. So anyway, I can't really mention who they are, but you know who they are.
We've discussed them before.
Yeah.
Same place I got my Subaru.
Is that where you got your Subaru from?
Yes. But again, that was a son running a little side business on his daddy's turf.
Okay. I didn't know you got your WRX from there, Alan.
I did.
And so a park next to your high exotica, there was a little old blob eye WRX.
There was basically a little side kind of shed where they had like trading cars and stuff. Yeah. I think I saw a couple of BMWs there as well. I'm like, there'd be some kind of sucker to buy one of those.
In walks Scotty.
Yes. Hey, you learn.
Yeah. Exactly. Life is a learning experiment, you know? And as long as you don't stop learning, I think it's fine.
Hey, Scotty, like after the Beamer, you got the C43, right?
Yes.
Did you buy that from a dealer or was that private?
That was from a dealer in New South Wales.
Okay.
And so it was pretty much like a trade in swap. So there's a factory or something they must have or connected with in Melbourne, just in Altona. Mm-hmm. So I just drove the BMW there, signed away, handed over the Beamer, and then drove out with the Mercedes.
Right. And you never had an issue with that car, did you?
No, it had leaking from the transmission, but I got that all fixed. So I did a full service. They changed the 16 spark plugs. Yeah. And they pulled the transmission filter out and everything and redid that and resealed it and fixed all that up for me. Other than that, yeah, no dramas with it. That was expensive in itself, really, but I thought that's just because it's Mercedes.
Yeah.
That was about $3,000.
That would have been one of those things you were told of, I guess, ahead of time rather than, oh, we found this.
Mm. Yeah, there's nothing that they found. I went in and said, I just want to give it a service, and transmission has a little bit of a leak, which I already knew about previously anyway to buying it. And they did all that. And yeah, it was all good.
I really like that car. It sounded good too, and every time you started it, I was like, "Yeah, that's a nice car."
Yeah, it had a nice little soft note to it.
It did.
Yeah, like Alan says, it's all learning this stuff. You can be really lucky with some cars, and you just don't know any better, you know. And then you have a doozy, and
I mean, those BMWs like Scotty had, they're just a doozy. Even if you buy a great one, even if you bought the best one in existence with the lowest best history, lowest mileage and best history, shit's still going to go wrong with that car and it's still going to be expensive. Like it's just, that's what they do. So
yeah, like mine, sorry to interrupt. I was just going to say mine, as you're saying, it had full service history from who bought it originally.
That won't save you. You know, it's because inherently that model, this is what they do. Whether you service them or don't service them, they're going to do this shit. So hindsight's a wonderful thing with cars like that because everyone learns those weak points and then sometimes there's some aftermarket fixes that come out that are cheaper than the factory fix. Like, you know, that S-Class that I had with the Airmatic suspension didn't put a foot wrong. The Airmatic was perfect in the 4 years I had it. However, you know, it was at an age where enough of them had gone wrong that there were, you know, there were airbags available out of the US. There were compressors that could be rebuilt out of the US reasonably cheaply. They weren't cheap, but they were a hell of a lot cheaper than Mercedes-Benz doing it. So, and we've said this before, but, you know, when that car was 3 years old, for example, and still under warranty or just out of warranty, your only option was to go back to Benz. You know, it's a $20,000 fix. So, you know, there are bills like that that you go, holy shit, you know, and you hear of people blowing up Volkswagen gearboxes or motors or whatever it might be. And it's like, oh, yeah, 15 grand for a gearbox and 25 grand for a motor. And, you know, that stuff does go on. But when a car's 10, 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, there's enough of them that have been around the traps. And then these alternative mechanics of, oh, yeah, we've seen that before. We've seen that before. There's a fix for that. Someone's making a part for that out of another market that we can use. And you get to sort of know a bit, yeah, you can get away with things a bit cheaper than you would have when it was 3 years old. But early on, I had an MG Midget. My first job was... you know, first full-time job where I was earning no money at all, but it was more money than I'd ever had. So I decided in that first year, I bought myself an MG Midget, which was the British sports convertible I'd always wanted, and a new stereo for my bedroom. So it was like two things in the first year, I am winning at life. And the Midget, I sort of did the right thing with that car because it was cosmetically restored. It had been painted. The interior had been carpeted and retrimmed. So it looked really good, but the motor hadn't been rebuilt. That was the next thing on the guy's list. It was the original motor. It was a 1275 A-series engine, same as a Mini Cooper S, same as in my Moke. And it had the original twin SU carbs on it and what have you. It was smoky. It was leaking oil from between the head and the block. It was pretty down on power. It wasn't a happy camper. So, of course, I got away with it for a while. I drove around in it for a bit, but I knew that I'm going to have to do this motor. So I sniffed out a really good operator who builds A-series race motors. For, if you've ever watched the historic racing at Bathurst when they have the Austin Healey Sprites and the MG Midgets and the Minis and the Falcons and from the 60s, he builds a lot of the motors that go into those Sprites. So he knows his way around that engine. So I sussed him out and a friend of mine had his engine done by him and he said, yeah, look, he's not the cheapest, but he's very, very good. Great. So I got him to do everything on it. And the whole time we were talking about it, you know, it was how much is this, how much is that? And I was very budget conscious because I didn't have a lot of spare money. I was earning bugger all. I'd already paid for the car, borrowed some money off my dad to buy the car. You know, I was paying that back. So, you know, I was conscious of, yeah. And he was like, oh, it's going to be $3,000. It's $3,500. But, you know, we'd always talked about that sort of dollar level, which was, this is, you know, it's not now money. This is talking like 1998, 1999 money. So, you know, I got the bill at the end and it was $6,000 and something dollars. It was like double.
Jeez.
And I'm like, oh, whoa. The whole way along, we've been talking about 3,200, 3,300, 3,500, you know. And he was like, oh yeah, but there's labor on top of that. I'm like, yeah, you didn't mention anything about labor. When I say how much is something, I mean, how much is something? Like if you tell me it's 500 to do the carbs, then it's 500 to do the carbs, not 500 plus 400 labor. Then tell me that, you know, tell me it's 900 to do the carbs. So I was really pissed off because I was 20 or 21. Like I wasn't very old. I hadn't dealt with a lot of mechanics in that, doing that sort of work. And I'm just like, mate, communicate the total dollar value. Don't, I just couldn't believe you would talk in dollars that didn't include labor.
Well, for everyone playing at home, my current inflationary dollars, that'd be about $11,000.
Yeah, that's about right. And yeah, if you want to rebuild an A series motor now, that's kind of where you're at. So I said to him, well, I can't pay the bill. Like I've budgeted for what you've talked about and now it's nearly double. Like, what are you doing? Anyway, so my dad loaned me some more money and then I just had to chip away and pay that off. But the motor itself and the work he did was brilliant. You know, I did 23,000 miles on that motor, which was nothing really. It was always very well serviced and it was running really sweetly the whole time. I never had an issue with it. I would have driven that car anywhere, you know, mechanically with that engine. So good work, but just not communicated very well.
Did you essentially put a race engine in that car?
No, it was the original motor, but I just had it warmed. It was a warm road motor. And, you know, he would build race motors that would rev out to 8,000 RPM and scream their way down the Bathurst straight. But round the corners, you know, these things were high compression engines. They were tuned and tweaked to within an inch of their life. And you can get a lot of power out of that motor with the right tuning and tweaking. But we discussed it at the start and I said, look, this is a road car. This is not a race car. I don't have roll bars in it. I'm not taking it on a track. Like, I just want a warm road motor. I want to take what MG did back in the day and just tweak it. So we did things like it had Cooper S pistons in it, which were a slightly better quality piston from memory. We had the crankshaft sort of honed. We had the head slightly ported so it just breathed better. High ratio rocker arms in it, which gave a bit more performance. It had a slightly lightened flywheel. We put a Weber carb on it with, and we've talked about this before, but, you know, jetted down so you get better flow. There's no point bolting a Weber on if you got massive jets in it. You know, it's sort of like the way you described it was like, you know, if you've got a massive pipe and you chuck water into it, it's just going to dribble through. But if you've got a smaller pipe and you chuck the same amount of water, it's going to flow through faster because of that restriction. So a lot of people with their carbs will, not jet the Webers down. So they'll scream at 8,000 RPM. They'll be brilliant. But at 2,000 RPM coming around a corner in second gear, they're useless. They all choke up and they're not running right. So he'd done a lot of research on those motors and a lot of building of them. So he just knew what to do. You know, he was like, yep, this, that'll get you this result. And it was great. It was a really drivable road motor.
It had a hot cam in it too, didn't it?
Yeah, mild camshaft. So you'd feel it, you know, you'd sort of get, but it wasn't too lumpy. It wasn't too crazy ground it wouldn't idle. You know, stupid lumpy cams are like blah, 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 at the traffic lights. And then you get them revving and then they're like, and they're on song. This thing the idle was fine, but you'd still feel that pickup sort of 3,800 on.
Yeah.
So it really came alive at the top end. It was great. I really, really liked that motor. And dare I say, I may well, if ever I need an A-series motor built, get him to do the next one. But you're going in with your eyes open, going, all right, what's this going to cost me, including labor?
Yeah.
So you learn this stuff as a youngster. And look, I've had other big bills, don't worry about that, over the years, but you sort of, I don't know, you become a bit more savvy, a bit more wary as to what's going to cost what. And you get a bit smarter about where to go for certain things. You know, what can you skimp on? What can you not skimp on? One of them that I had, and this was stupid, I had a little Honda Civic, like an ED Civic hatch a few years ago that I bought and sold. And that I needed tires. And normally for tires, I'll go to our favorite Wrecker because they have a selection of roadworthy tires. And most of them are near new that come off cars in the yard. So, you know, if you want a 13, 14, 15 inch tire, they're really cheap. And they're good. You know, there's nothing wrong with them. So you can get a full set of tires for $120 that are nearly new. So I've done that numerous times. And I like the fact too, it's recycling. You know, they don't just go into landfill. And if it's just a cheapish buy and sell Honda or a Mazda or something, it's like, well, these are perfectly adequate tires. Anyway, I'd taken it into this mechanic to get a roadie and it really didn't need anything other than tires. And he said, oh, do you want me to put tires on it? I'm like, oh, yeah, all right. You know, they're like 14-inch rims. Like, I thought, how expensive can these things be? Like, they're $80 a tire, $70 a tire, you know. I got a bill for like $550 or something. And I'm like, mate, what did you put on this Pirelli P-Zeros or something? He goes, oh, that's all I could get. And I'm thinking, that's bullshit. It's all you can get. Anyway, I wasn't happy about that. But then there's other things that are way cheaper than you think. Like I think I've told this story too, but I had a Mercedes 190E manual, factory manual Australian delivered car, which is quite rare, and it needed a new gear shift rubber. You know, the gaiter around the gear shift was busted. Now, that's a very specific gaiter on that car. They didn't sell a lot of manuals in Australia. They did in Europe, maybe more so, but I just assumed, not knowing any better, that that part would be really pricey. So I went to Autobahn and Supercheap and, you know, Repco, and I was like, oh, what have you got? And they had the generic rubber gaiters, and they weren't the same, and they didn't fit the console with the wood around it, and, you know, all of that. So I kind of went, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? In the end, I just rang Mercedes Turak of all places and said, hey, got this, da da da. And they looked up the part number. Yep, we've got one of those, $20. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And they're like, no, $20. Yeah, we can get it in stock tomorrow. I'm like, hallelujah. You know, so. And it's obviously a part that didn't move a lot in Australia. They probably had one on a shelf that they discounted the hell out of just to move it. And it just goes to show it's always worth just ringing the manufacturer first to get that line in the sand, because you might be surprised. Another time I went to Fraser Island in my old Discovery and I cracked the headlights around, which is that black plastic sort of, you know, aperture that goes around the square headlight. And they get old and they're brittle and they're horrible. Anyway, I looked online and everywhere, and in the end, I just rang Land Rover. At the end of my street, there's a Land Rover dealer. And they basically said, oh, yeah, we've got a parts clearance. We've got some of those on the shelf. Yeah, $100 the pair. So I replaced the broken one, but then I had to replace the other one because otherwise it would look funny having one new, one old. But $100 the pair, I'm like, well, you can't go wrong. Like, I can't get them anywhere for that. So it's sort of worth trying that stuff for an older car, because you never know what the dealer's just got sitting around.
Well, that's why I think I scored well on the Typhoon clutch, because they were just pissing off all FPV stuff. Like they were getting rid of it. They didn't want to have it in stock anymore because they were moving anything to do with Australian-made Fords out the door.
Yeah.
And I think I just got lucky. Like the fact that he remembered I had a you know early Typhoon, yeah. and he's like, was like, look, you know. Even aftermarket clutches for that car are $1,500. Like that's so he's always like, you're putting the genuine clutch back in it, which is good. And again, it's just sitting there doing nothing. But you know, there'll be that day that I'll only get a clutch, and I'll be like, oh, I already paid for it. Just whack it in.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, you're right with that.
There you go. So sometimes we win, sometimes we lose.
Car talk top tip: check the dealer.
Yep.
Last topic of this evening before we get into the quiz is car of the week. The rules are $10,000 or cheaper.
All right. If that's the case, then I'll send mine through.
Yep.
To you, Matty.
All right. Here we go. So, Alan, can you please explain what this is while I share the screen?
So this is the almighty AU Falcon, a 2001 XR6. Tickford, you know, it's a venom red. Currently does not come with a registration or roadworthy, but it did pass a roadworthy not too long ago, so it really wouldn't need that much. Looks quite nice for its age, but you know, given its age, it would maybe need a bit of a cut and polish. Comes with a spare set of wheels and needs spare parts.
It's pretty tidy inside.
Look, it's got 296,000 Ks, but that's Ford Ks, you know, that's the minimum they'd come with. You know, and for AUs, especially like regular, like non-XR6 AUs are going pretty up because people like, again, they use them a lot for drift cars and that sort of thing. People are really warming up to these. So for an actual, you know, XR6 with all the what do you want to call it? The extra special Tickford bits and everything else, I'd say it's pretty well worth it at a princely sum of $4,500.
Absolutely.
Especially with the spare parts and everything else. Just the fact that you get into an XR6 rather than, you know, your standard Forte or whatever. So that's what I've brought to the race, and it's your consideration.
It's actually not bad. It actually looks really tidy. You know, it looks like it needs a few things here and there. But my only issue with that, it's not the VCT, the variable cam timing one. It's the cheaper XR6, and that one didn't come with IRS. It came with a live axle, which is good for your drifting people, because if they want a live axle one, that'd be the one to go with.
You swap a T5 into it, you know, and then you weld a diff, and yeah, you're good to go.
Good to go, absolutely. And how much is this? This is $4,500.
$4,000, and you know, located in Echuca, you know. One of the greatest places in Victoria.
Damn, that's not bad. I liked on these how on their heads they said Tickford because they had kind of the in Tickford enhanced cams and etc. So that is pretty cool. I like it, mate. Scotty.
On that note, I unfortunately have to bounce tonight, gentlemen.
Oh, good.
I do apologize, but that's my vote. I'm going for that, sir. Let me know if I win. I better win.
Sounds good, mate. Sounds good.
Your vote, matey. Catch you later. Thank you very much for having
Catch
me.
Catch you later, mate.
See ya. Me. Okay. All right. Let's hope that the sharing works.
Yeah,
is that working?
That is working very well.
Oh, C240.
Yeah,
that's your six cylinder.
That is your six cylinder.
Isn't it the six cylinder?
You like a 202, don't you, Scotty?
Yeah, I don't know why. There's something about it. I just really like the 202s.
They're a good car. Love a 202.
Yeah, so this one's got, 200 something odd thousand Ks. Interiors, you just get the steering wheel redone and stuff like that. So. Yeah. I don't know why people go for that colored interior, cream and tan and all that.
Yeah.
Does not age well.
No, I like it. It's nice and light. It makes it feel airy.
Airy.
The seats are in good nick.
Yeah. It comes with everything that you want. Doesn't seem to have any dramas. He's saying, it's been the most reliable car, yada, yada, yada. No major mechanical issues for the last 6 years. So I had it for a long time. Regularly see service checkup with Merc Talk specialist a month ago. Car is in solid condition. New battery installed. Obviously, for its age, it's 1999. It's got some scratches and things like that. Surface paint bubbling front left corner. But that's all stuff that you could pitch in to fix, considering you're only paying $38.50 for it.
That's good value. That's a lot of car for 38.
Very good.
Yeah.
Where is that car?
New South Wales.
Yeah. It was local. I might go and buy that.
Yeah. Scotty. So it's 220,000 Ks. It's not much on it.
That's nothing.
Yeah. $38.50.
That's a mutter.
Throw a couple more grand in it and get it looking absolutely fresh.
You down for a road trip to pick this thing up? I really like it, Scotty.
Oh, let's go.
Yeah, I mean, if I was to get another 202, it would be a six-cylinder at least.
Yes, absolutely. I completely agree with you there. It actually looks really good and really original for the Ks. I like that. I really like that a lot.
I was just going to, for the price, where is it? Down here. Da-da-da-da. There's a C36 with 200,000 Ks on it for $35,990.
Mm-hmm.
But they have gone up, and I think there was a C43 there for $34,000.
Wow.
And I bought mine for about $17,000 or $18,000.
Wow.
Quite a few years ago now, though, obviously. Yeah. But
I still
it was inevitable that they'd jump up in price. I'm amazed that they dropped down that far, really. Yeah. That amazed me. But that shift knob looks a little bit different, a bit tacky. That's not the original. Mine didn't have wood grain, though. Mine had, like, the carbon fiber, pretend carbon fiber look, not the wood.
You could get that on those.
Yeah. So it made it look that little bit more sporty. Everything else looks identical and clean in that one. Two air filters in the damn thing.
Yeah, that's right.
My two K&N ones to replace.
I remember that.
That was funny. Oh, and the funny thing about that is when I went to replace it, they already had K&N ones in there. Anyway. So
Edward, you found it was me yet?
I found something that interests me. It's a 1969 Citroen ID19. So this is the DS.
Mm-hmm.
It is a little bit of a resto project, but it looks like a very original car. I'm going to hold my phone up to the screen for a moment, please. You'll see there the original Citroen DS. This is $9,000 in WA. He's written quite a lot of lengthy words about it. It's quite an early DS.
Yes, I was going to say that'd be an early DS.
Early DS because it's got it's got the later headlights on it, so it can't be too early. But, that caught my eye because they're not like a $9,000 car normally, but he says basically it's a resto project, dry stored since the mid to late 80s. And then he's gone on to talk about the history and the provenance of the car. And, you know, it sounds like it, you know, it needs to be recommissioned, a bit like your Stampy, Matthew. But when you're starting at 9K, well, hey, you know, it ain't that crazy.
How much do they usually go for?
A really nice one is sort of like 35, 40, 50, 60. You know, like yeah. I think the ones that bring the biggest money tend to be the 25 DS25 Palais, which is a, or Palais, which are the biggest engine and the most plush trim. But they all look the same.
You see one sitting on top of a container almost every single day driving to and from work.
Really?
Yeah.
So I'm driving today.
Completely rusted now, just sitting on top of an old shipping container.
Yeah. Gosh, they're a cool car. I've never driven one. I would love to. But, yeah, God, starting at 9, even if you sort of got that for 8 and you tip 10 into it and you're at 18 and you might have a bit of a rat rod, you know, just a usable car that's mechanically okay, but, you know, a bit scuffy around the body. I went to a Volksy show actually a couple of weekends ago. And it was just any Volksy, so but old stuff like air cooled stuff, and there were quite a number of Combis and Beetles that were ratty as hell, you know, deliberately ratty, but mechanically beautiful, and they just looked so good. There was one in particular that literally looked like it'd been dragged out of a swamp, and but just you know, yeah, I don't know, I love that because it's just so usable,
yeah.
You know, and you motor around and it just look, you're not worried about it. Just it looks great. So I commend people that can pull off the ratty look well. So we've got the Citroen DS that needs money tipped in. We've got Scotty's, Alum's Ford, was it?
XR6, AU yeah. XR6.
Scotty's W202.
202 six-cylinder. C240.
Yep.
And I'm going to show you guys a Ford Territory.
Ooh.
This one here is a black Ford TS Territory. So TS is mid-spec.
Not a turbo.
Yeah, it's been turboed. So it looks all stock.
Yeah.
And then you get to there and someone's put a lot of money into it.
So it's not a factory turbo, but it is turbo now.
It's not a factory turbo, but it's turbo now. But like it looks like a really honest, clean car. Like it looks really a factory and original.
That's true.
Except a little boost gauge there kind of gives it away, but everything else looks super duper original, which I actually really like. So it basically says here, turbocharged Territory with roadworthy and rego, ECU tuned and trans-tuned, custom intake manifold, full custom exhaust boost, battery relocation and front mount intercooler, new diff bushes, new engine mounts, new rocker cover gaskets, done. Good on this car, told by previous owner, it makes 260 kilowatts at 9 PSI on 98 fuel, and this car is a grand total of 8,550, gentlemen. 8,550, which is a lot of car for $8,550. I think that's quite good value, considering it's been all turboed and ready to go. And when normal Territory turbos are a lot more money, that would make a fast family hauler.
Yeah, because you wouldn't know looking at the front of it.
Yeah, it looks like a basic. Yeah, it's a real sleeper, that car, and that's why I was like, that caught my eye. I was like, ooh, that's actually really kind of cool. So there's your four cars.
Your 60 at the wheels. That's pretty quick.
Yeah, very quick.
Such a low boost.
Yeah, not 9 PSI. Nine PSI is nothing for a Barra. So that's actually really good. So Alum's AUXR6, Scotty's C240. Edwards DS and my turbocharged Territory. Where's your money going?
How much was your 240, Scotty?
It was $38.50.
Such a good price.
I'm going that.
Scott?
Give me the C240 at that money. You know, if it was 10 grand, but at $38.50, yes.
Yeah. That Territory would be a lot of fun. But I think I'd probably just have more fun fixing and tinkering with the W202 and just cleaning it up.
So 202 is your pick. Alan picked his car because that's Alan. But that C240 for that money is ridiculously good, and it's hard to pass up. So I'm with you, Scotty. I'm Ben's all the way.
That's three votes for the Benz.
Three votes for the Benz. Yeah, well done.
Done.
Scotty Doe wins car of the week. Well done.
Benz wins.
All right, and isn't it?
Time for the quiz.
It is now time for the car quiz, gentlemen, where we've got 10 questions plus some bonus questions, as we normally do here on a Tuesday night. Gentlemen, I'm going to get my notepad out and get started. All right. This is the Car Talk Car Quiz. 10 questions plus some bonus questions. Let's get into it. Question one. What is a Toyota Corolla Windy?
Windy?
Windy, as in windy. Windy.
Never heard of it. I don't know what that is.
Scott.
Scott.
Is it like a special convertible one?
It's not a convertible one, Scotty.
Yeah, I haven't heard that before.
They're pretty cool. Quite rare. I've only seen like one or two ever.
Now that I'm out, I'm going to Google it.
Yep.
What is it?
No idea. It is a four-wheel drive Corolla. It is an older four-wheel drive Corolla.
Not sold here.
No, it wasn't, but there's a lot here that were all, you know,
brought in. Always giving us quiz questions of cars that weren't sold here.
Oh, God. Question two. Sticking with Toyota, which car have they officially axed this year after a 16-year production run?
Ed.
Oh, Ed.
I'm the same.
Was it the Ruckus?
Nah, not the Ruckus.
What have they killed off?
So they killed it here a few years ago, but it's still been in sale in Japan and a few other places.
Yeah.
The
Ruckus.
I'm trying to think what they were still making elsewhere. Nah, not sure.
The FJ Cruiser is officially ending production this year after 16 years.
I forgot all about that car.
What a shine.
Bonus question. Who built the FJ Cruiser?
Toyota.
Toyota's subsidiary, I can never say that word, a different company that Toyota owns built it. Who built it?
Daihatsu.
Incorrect.
I wasn't serious with that, but I don't know, so I'm happy to not answer anymore.
Well, it's not Daihatsu, Edward. There you go.
FJ Cruiser. I'm not sure who else they owned.
Got another idea, though.
Yeah, go, Edward. I'll give it to you.
Heavy Industries.
No, that is Scubaroo.
Yeah, but I thought that there might be some cross-pollination.
No, which wouldn't be too far off because, you know, them and Subaru do the 86 together. Scott, you got any idea?
They weren't in bed with Mitsubishi?
No, Hino or Yuno.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
They own Hino, that is true. Yep.
Question three. What car broke the front-wheel drive record at the Nürburgring recently?
Ed. Honda Civic Type R.
Honda Civic Type R is absolutely correct. The new one, the FL5, broke.
The new one.
Question four. What has happened to my car? According to a news article on abc.net.au, and I quote, when she returned to her car that afternoon, she turned on the ignition and the engine roared so loudly that she thought it was another car. She then turned it off and then back on again, and it was still the same. What happened to Caitlin Evans' car?
Is this like where they write into the newspaper with a car problem?
Yeah. So no, it's a news article that's been in the news recently.
It was really loud, and she turned it off, then she turned it on again, and it was still really loud.
Really loud. Yeah. What happened to Caitlin Evans' car? This is Caitlin Evans' story.
Sorry. I mean. So you want us to mechanically diagnose this?
Mechanically diagnose it or tell us what's happening recently that's become a bit of an epidemic.
Scott.
Chroming with gauges, chroming.
The cat converter was stolen.
Cat converter was absolutely stolen, Scotty. Well,
that's what I was going to say, yeah.
At first, I was thinking maybe the accelerator's stuck.
It's got to be exhaust related.
Tell you what, one of the ladies I work with at school, she came to work and she's like, Matt, can you have a look at my car? She's like, it's so loud and it's the whole car's vibrating and now my steering's, you know, kind of gone off. I'm like, oh, that sounds weird. You know, she's got an old Subaru Outback, so I went and had a look at it. I'm like, started the car. I'm like, my God, it sounds loud as. I'm like, what have you done to it? And this was like only like a good month and a half ago, and she's like to me, oh. I don't know. It's like I was driving to work and then it just got loud. Anyway, and then I'm like, what's wrong with your steering? She's like, it's just the steering is just completely just jammed up. I'm like, how did you drive it to work? She's like, very slowly on the freeway. I thought I was going to die. Anyway, I have a look underneath the car. and they've cut her cat off. And it was just hanging there. And basically what I said happens, someone's probably walked outside and spooked them, and they've run off and they've left half the job there. So she so the poor thing had to get the car towed to the mechanics, and they had to weld it all back up.
Wow.
So but like nobody knows about how expensive they are to do. But anyway, that's another story. So that's what's happening in this world.
They can't steal mine on the Subaru.
It's too low.
No, because the Subaru came with like three.
Yeah.
So you got two that are right up there where the headers are.
Oh, yep.
And there's meant to be one in the middle. Meant to be one in the middle.
Solid. Scotty solid.
Slide straight through.
Score check. One apiece. Question five. The first generation of the Dodge Viper had an engine size of what in liters? Ed. Ed.
Viper. My friend has one of those things.
He does.
Broke down on my birthday drive.
I helped him that day.
You did. That car.
It's a very big engine.
It is very big, isn't it? I think it's like a 6.7.
Well, it's incorrect, but I'll put it as your guess. I'll give closest to.
Eight.
Scotty.
8.
8 liters is absolutely correct, Scotty. It is an 8-liter V10.
Jesus Christ.
That's straight from the massive trucks.
Yeah, exactly where it's from.
Isn't it a bit bigger now than the new ones, like 8.3 or something?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it is even bigger, which is just insane. Question six. The BMW E60 chassis was produced between what years?
Ed.
I'll give you a point for each, Edward.
All right, I'll get it wrong, Scott.
Get ready to jump in. A point for each.
In Australia, I think we got it in 03, but I'm going to go 02, like as the earliest. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to bookend that at the other end. The F10, we got 2007, 2008, 2009. We got the F10 in 2010. So I'm going to go 02 to 2010.
2010 is correct. 02 is incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'll give you a point for it. Scotty, so you got a chance. Incorrect. It was 03.
It was the other way around, damn it.
So, yeah, bonus question. What was the engine code of the V10 engine that they had?
Ed. That engine is the – it's on Alex's number plate. Is it an S54? No. What's his M6 – S65?
Incorrect.
God damn it. Scotty. I know this.
Is it M60?
No, it's the S85.
Oh, S. It was still S. No, I thought it was M for some reason. I don't know. I think I'm getting confused with Mercedes.
Yeah, because Alex has played his M6 S85.
Yeah, that'd be okay.
Put that in his M6, the same motor.
Score check, 2 apiece. Getting close. Question seven. How many transmission options are available in the current Subaru WRX?
Ed. 2.
2 is correct, Edward. They've got a manual and a CVT. Constant very disappointment transmission. question eight. In what year was the last Commodore badged car sold in Australia?
Ed. I think the last Commodore was like 19.
Incorrect.
2016.
Incorrect. It was 2020. It was the last Commodore badged vehicle, which was the.
It wasn't the proper Commodore. It was that bullshit Opeland.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, everyone.
Yeah.
It's probably for the best, Scotty, that you forgot about that one.
No, I forgot about that. They made it like four wheel drive and everything.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Yeah. Okay, now the next question, question nine. There is 3 points up for grabs. Besides the Middle East, Europe, and North America, where else was the Commodore exported to?
Middle East, Europe, North America.
Still under like Commodore or just the vehicle itself?
The vehicle itself. So I think they were called other names over there. But
Scott. Hang on. What countries did you already say? Could you say it again? Sorry.
Middle East, Europe, which I'll classify as the UK as well. We'll put the UK.
Oh, okay.
And North America.
New Zealand.
New Zealand's correct. That's one. Yep.
South Africa.
That's another one.
I'm not sure where else. I'll just places. Say guess maybe South America.
I can't give that to you, Scotty.
Too big continent, not too a country. Big.
Yeah, too
big. That's fair. That's fair.
Edward.
So Middle East, Europe, North America. I know they went to America.
Yeah, so they went to Europe, UK. Scotty has said
I gave you the continent.
South Africa and New Zealand.
Mm. I don't know where they sent them.
Have a punt.
Did they send them to the UK?
Well, what we said the UK was
a. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Did they send them to Germany?
We also said Europe, Edward. Sorry.
So the whole of Europe's ruled out then?
Yeah, correct. Yes.
Did they send them to...
Did I choose the right continent?
Yes. There's two other continents, actually.
So think of a country in South America.
Cuba.
Incorrect.
Okay. I don't know.
Correct, my friend.
I don't know.
They sold it in Brazil. And yeah, they sold it also in Southeast Asia. Out of all places, the Commodore.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Southeast Asia.
The Commodore did make its way around. It got out there.
It got around.
So, yeah, they sold the Commodore in the Middle East, in UK, in Europe, in North America, New Zealand, South Africa, Brazil, and in parts of Southeast Asia. Question 10. Now, score check. Scotty is on 4. Edward is on 3. Question 10. The new Ford Rangers V6. Is taken from what brand of car?
I don't know. Ford.
Scott, I'll take a guess.
Scott.
Is it from the Jag? Sorry, Maddie's just talking to the higher-ups.
It's like Big Brother where you got to go to the adjudicator or something.
Yeah. He's like, oh, and he's just listening in. Just one sec.
So the V6 Turbo Diesel, that is, yeah? This is the V6 Turbo Diesel, just to clarify.
Because Jag had one, I'm pretty sure.
They did.
I don't know if it was the same one though.
Scotty, you get 0.5 because it is available in Jags, Citroens, and Peugeots.
Cool.
So you get 0.5. But where is it originating from?
Take a punt, Ed. What do you reckon?
Renault.
Incorrect. It is a Land Rover Discovery Range Rover Sport engine.
Oh my God. It could be a terrible Ranger.
Yep. Yes, rest in peace to any hope that the Ranger might have had. So that is the car quiz, gentlemen. Score check, Edward on 3, and tonight's winner on a grand total of 4.5 is Scotty. Ooh. Well done.
Well done, Scott.
Thank you.
Well done, Scott. Well done. You now can go reward yourself by buying yourself a Ford Ranger V6.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Gee, I hope.
Oh, mate. Hopefully they've made it somewhat reliable. I mean, the V6 turbo diesel, it's somewhat okay from what I've heard, but time will tell. I think that's a podcast, gentlemen.
Thank you very much, Matthew. It's been fun.
You.
Scotty, golf tip of the week.
Golf tip of the week. This one is from a YouTube video. I've watched a few of his and just helping with hitting your irons a lot better. A lot of the times you might be swinging and you tend to shift your weight backwards. Don't. Keep your weight over the ball. Keep it straight. Just swing the hips, not your whole body. Don't go all the way with it. You'll connect with the ball so much better.
So don't Happy Gilmore. Just move your hips.
You can try it. I mean, if it works consistently, then go for it.
Dude, when I was in Adelaide, they had Live Golf on at that time.
That was going off.
Adelaide was going off, man. It was going nuts. I was like, this place is sick. So, definitely. I'm becoming a golf fan, like you, Scotty. Becoming a golf fan.
Awesome.
Edward, I believe you do a podcast, and your podcast is coming
back. Yeah, Auto Retro. I talked to our editor the other day, and he's changed jobs, and he's got more time, and so he's really keen to get back into editing Auto Retro, where we talk to guests about the cars of their lives. Coming back soon, hopefully.
Awesome. I look forward to listening to it.
He's no longer at Hyundai?
No longer at that business, no.
Wow.
He's out of automotive doing other things in terms of marketing.
There you go.
But yeah.
Mm.
So yeah, exciting times.
Like and share our Facebook page, it's Car Talk TORQE with Matty J. If you miss any of our previous episodes, they're all up on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasting apps. So don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review to us there. Check out our merch, go to our Teespring store, go to teespring.com and type in Car Talk Store. Support the show by buying some merch there, or support the show by becoming a patron to our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/Car Talk Podcast and support the show there. Gentlemen, awesome night. Scotty won everything tonight. He won bloody the car quiz. He won car of the week. Well done. Well done.
That's what happens when I leave for a week. I come back and just dominate. That's right. I'll slot back in and just lose all the time again now.
I missed the week. It didn't do me any good.
All right, gentlemen.
Right, boys, you have a nice one. See you later.
Okay, see you later.
See ya.